Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of the obvious antichrist to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the jingoism fallacy, also known as appeal to patriotism.
Yeah, so jingoism.
Yeah.
It's often used to mean an extreme form of patriotism that goes along with kind of war hawkishness.
Right.
Bellicose variety of patriotism.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because it comes from an old English term, by jingo, which was used in a kind of pro-fighting Russia music hall song in the 1870s.
Wow.
So the lyrics in this 1878 song were, we don't want to fight, but by jingo, if we do, we've got the ships, we've got the men, we've got the money too. And so that got so popular that people who were pro-fighting the Russians at that point became called jingoists.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And so jingoism was the rhetoric of the jingoists.
It was
the pro-war patriotism.
How about that?
It's used as a fallacy,
It's
basically just that appeal to patriotism. It's saying that if you love America or if you love Britain or wherever you happen to be from and appealing to, then it's that over giving a reason or making an actual argument.
Yeah.
It's kind of appealing to that side of emotion.
And the obverse also, that, you know, if you're not this, then you are not worth light.
Absolutely,
we should avoid you, or we shouldn't believe what you say.
We touched on this in part when we did, I think it was episode 95, appeal to loyalty, because loyalty as well, kind of, you know, part of it is loyalty to your country or to your leader or whatever. So there were a couple of patriotic examples in there, but this is very specifically that side of it. And our first example comes from a Trump tweet from February 15th, this year, when some courts were ruling against the Trump administration because they were doing blatantly illegal things.
Yep.
And so Trump tweeted, "He who saves his country does not violate any law," which is
kind of
a direct quote from Napoleon.
Right.
Obviously, Napoleon said it in French.
Yeah.
Because that's what, actually, he wasn't. French wasn't even Napoleon's first language, but a lot of the stuff he said was in French.
Yeah.
And it's only probably a quote from Napoleon, because it's the place where it is from is a book of quotes that Balzac wrote of things Napoleon said.
Yeah.
And it's in there.
Right.
The book came out like 15 years after Napoleon died, but Balzac was a reasonably good biographer. And so it's probably a thing he said at some point. But Napoleon was a little bit of a dictator.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of an emperor in waiting. Yeah.
Self-declared emperor.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And that was kind of where he was going with that. was essentially declaring himself above the law because he was protecting his country. And Trump was using it in a very similar manner.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially saying that, you know, these courts, these judges that are ruling against me, they shouldn't be able to do that, because I'm doing the stuff I'm doing for my country, I'm saving my country.
I'm doing the work of Napoleon.
Yeah.
I'm saving the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the fact that, so his appeal to patriotism actually obviates the need to prove anything.
Absolutely.
Vis-a-vis why the country is saving, especially in a court where they kind of, that's their sort of stock in trade.
It's their whole thing.
You know, well, yeah, where's your evidence for that? Yeah, well, I'm not going to provide any. It's just intuition.
Yeah, and of course, logically speaking, this kind of does discount the possibility of someone claiming patriotism or claiming that their country needs saving and the things they're doing are going to move things in that direction by doing stuff that they're not really supposed to do.
Yeah.
And if you just allow it because it's in the service of saving the country, both of those things look exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
That's it's kind of like saying that, you know, the end justifies the means.
The claimed end. That's the, it's worse than that. Yes. The claimed end justifies the means.
Yes, it's not even as by any means necessary because the end was clear.
Yeah.
This is just, well, I'm going to say it's a national emergency or I'm saving the country by these acts, so therefore you can't censure me, nor can you even ask me how it is that this will save the country.
It's very unpatriotic to even question, isn't it? That's the thing.
That's it, yes.
It's anti-American.
Yes, it's worse than being un-American. It's anti-American. It's anti-revolutionary, as they used to say by Jingo in Russia.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So our second example from Trump is one of his executive orders.
Yeah.
I know this applies to most of them, but this is one of the ones which, when you read it, you repeatedly say, what the actual fuck? This is called Ending Radical Indoctrination in K-12 Schooling.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not actually about that because none of Trump's executive orders are about the thing that it says. This is an anti-acknowledging racism exists and that there are gay people order in schools. And it starts out, parents trust America's schools to provide their children with a rigorous education and to instill a patriotic admiration for our incredible nation and the values for which we stand. Do they?
Do they know?
I mean, the first bit, I don't know that they trust. They hope that America's schools will provide their children with a rigorous education.
Yeah.
That would be that's the ideal. I don't think most parents in America who send their kids to public schools trust that that is absolutely happening. That they're getting a rigorous education.
Yeah, but they're getting an education. Yeah. They're not so worried about the instilling of a patriotic admiration for the incredible nation.
That I would argue not the school's job.
No. And that, nor do they trust the schools to do that. Because why would you when you can't actually? It's just no.
But apparently that's not happening. What parents trust. It continues. In recent years, however, parents have witnessed schools indoctrinate their children in radical anti-American ideologies while deliberately blocking parental oversight.
Yeah.
It carries on. Like, I won't read every single bit of it, but it says, in many cases, innocent children are compelled to adopt identities as either victims or oppressors solely based on their skin colour and other immutable characteristics. In other instances, young men and women are made to question whether they were born in the wrong body and whether to view their parents and their reality as enemies to be blamed.
Wow.
That none of that is happening.
No.
In American schools.
They're not. They're neither questioning that, nor are they made to do so.
No.
Nor viewing those as enemies to be blamed.
No. But this is described in the EO as imprinting anti-American, subversive, harmful and false ideologies on our nation's children. So,
wow.
Basically, they're saying we are uncomfortable when we know that trans people exist or gay people exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't like it constantly being pointed out to us how racist we are. So we're going to call that un-American.
Yes, subversive and harmful and false.
And outlaw
because they're nothing if not the Ministry of Truth.
Yeah. And it is just, what the fuck?
What the actual fuck? Yeah. God damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So our final example in Trump world comes to us from an unusual place because we were sent an email, as we sometimes are, from people who would like to appear on our show, as we so commonly have guests on our show. It's like a thing we almost always do. And so we get people saying, oh, I think you'd like this person. They should be a guest.
Yeah.
And so the email started out very positively. Hi, Jim and Mark. Navigating through the host of political twists and turns on Fallacious Trump feels like a thrilling ride full of humour and insight, a true testament to your show's brilliance. So clearly a regular listener.
Well, yeah, quite.
Not just someone trying to butter us up to get their friend on the show.
By asking ChatGPT what we're about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say, I have someone who could match that energy and insight for a captivating conversation on your podcast, Dr. Carol Lieberman.
Okay.
So Dr. Carol Lieberman is a psychiatrist. And my first indication that she might not be a suitable guest for the show came in the next paragraph, where she was described as her expert analysis on Trump derangement syndrome as a reflection of national mental health crisis is a topic I'm sure your audiences would find both engaging and impactful. Dr. Lieberman takes a bold stance against how the mainstream media weaponizes mental health, challenging leftist narratives on social issues and highlighting the manipulation often hidden in plain sight.
Right up our street.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's signed with warm regards, Kristen Davis.
Yeah.
Think Right PR. Think Right PR, as the name suggests, is a right-wing PR company run by Kristen Davis, who is a longtime collaborator with Roger Stone.
Hey! Yeah.
So my reply to this person was, wow, you haven't even listened to 5 minutes of our show, have you? And
yeah, you don't need to listen to the opening titles, really, wouldn't you? Wow.
So I suggested that Carol Lieberman might not be the right fit for our audience, but that doesn't mean I don't want to talk about her, because included in the email were a couple of links to other interviews she's done.
Right.
And so I did, you know, I was curious.
Yeah.
I wondered exactly how much of a nut job this woman is. And so I clicked on them, and one of them was an interview she did with Shemaine Nugent on Real America's Voice. Now, Shemaine Nugent is Ted Nugent's wife.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
This was just after the not State of the Union, address, the joint Houses of Congress. And Carol Lieberman said this.
Here he's talking about all these things that he's done just in his first 43 days, right? That certainly were very good for America, from trying to prevent America from getting broke, to trying to get the criminals, illegal aliens off our streets, to trying to prevent World War III. I mean, what person, what sane person would be against any of that? And instead, they either just sat there stone-faced or raised their placards, or in one instance, at least, got very boisterous and tried to stop the whole thing. So it is just absurd. I mean, you have to ask, why? Why do they hate America?
Wow, got very boisterous and tried to stop the whole thing.
Yeah, that was Al Green.
Oh, okay.
He was waving his cane.
Not the January the 6th.
No, not that.
They
didn't get boisterous. No, they were just patriots.
No. Yeah.
So,
wow. I mean, do they hate America or what?
Do they hate? It's not a question of whether they. It's why do they hate America?
They do. Yeah, obviously, they do. They're just. Yeah. Well,
that's
why,
the only explanation you see. Because otherwise, what sane person wouldn't think that all of the things Trump claims he's done with no evidence whatsoever are incredibly positive?
Yeah. And including stopping World War III, which he then kind of caveats as trying to stop World War III.
She's not prepared to commit to him definitely having stopped World War III.
Because
then if World War III does break out, she's going to look silly.
She's going to look so daft.
So
red-faced.
No, she had to caveat that. But
yes.
Yeah, there is a possibility that there's another reason why the Democrats weren't all enthusiastic about all of the stuff Trump's doing. That isn't because they hate America.
They hate America.
One possibility is he's doing bad things.
Yeah.
And even though he claims that they are good things, he's lying. Like he has continuously ever since he was first in the public eye.
Yes. Yeah. But if you point that out, then
you
obviously
hate America.
Yeah.
It's the only explanation.
We would so get stopped at the border, wouldn't we?
I'm not getting in for years. Yeah.
No. 172 episodes of this, plus all the other stuff.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
In British politics, as is often the case, it's a little bit more nuanced to out-and-out jingoistic proclamations like, does not violate the law. but they do seem to be implied in the bandying about of whether one party is more patriotic than the other. The implication is if your party is not patriotic, then you're not the best choice for Britain. You would be bad for Britain. The Labour Party, for instance, were very bad for Britain because they were unpatriotic and they were very keen to be seen to be patriotic in 2021.
Earlier this month, it was reported that a branding organisation called Republic had suggested you and your colleagues should use the union flag more and dress smartly. Is that part of the rebranding that will put Labour back on track, Sir Keir?
Actually, when I do my addresses to the nation and my press conferences, we do have a flag. And because it's the flag of the United Kingdom. Also, I'm patriotic. I want to lead our country because I want our country to be even better than it is now. I fundamentally believe in our country and I'm very comfortable with that. I don't have any problem with that. I actually think that if you think about the Labour Party, it's 500,000 people who've joined the Labour Party who are active trying to get Labour elected because they believe in a better future. That is very patriotic and we shouldn't be shy about this.
And it kind of comes on the back of the fact that the right-wing parties like UKIP and then whatever the one Reclaim before Reform, they're all about union flags. And Starmer says Union Jack in the extended interview and he gets corrected. No, it's Union Flag. We've all called it like Union Jack since forever. What's also interesting is that they're still doing that. So it's very patriotic for all of these people to join the Labour Party and want to vote them in is a very patriotic thing to do, despite the fact that the association with Corbyn is what Starmer is trying. So that bit about dress smartly is because Corbyn didn't used to. And as in one episode, Cameron said, yeah, put a tie on, will you? So they're kind of distancing themselves from Corbyn at the same time as claiming the 500,000 people as patriots. The 500,000 people joined the Labour Party to elect Corbyn as leader. That's when that happened.
Yeah.
So there they are kind of getting rid of him because he was... well, it's complicated, but he was over to the left. He was threatening the status quo. They got rid of him because he was in favour of the horribly un-British approach of talking with antagonists, including the IRA, rather than just bombing innocent people in the blind pursuit of wiping out terrorism, which is terribly un-British, so you can't do that. And Theresa May, Boris Johnson, and... Sunak all used to kind of churn up the thing where you befriended Hamas and you befriended the IRA and blah, 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 blah. Yes, he was part of the IRA peace process. That was a very patriotic thing for the Tory to be associated with, but it's unpatriotic for Corbyn to have started that process by talking to the IRA at the time. Let's nip over the patriotic fence to the Tory party, and no one, so this is the thing that sprung immediately to mind when this one came up, no one suffered at the hands of the jingoistic patriotism fallacy more than poor old Tory leader Rishi Sunak during the general election campaign in 2024, despite his claims to be patriotic in his leadership bid. He did the unthinkable and left the D-Day memorial celebrations in France to return to the election campaign.
That, in a nutshell, are my values. Patriotism, family, service, hard work.
And I participated in events both in Portsmouth and in France, and having fully participated in all the British events with British veterans, I returned home before the International Leaders event. That was a mistake, and I apologise for that. But I will always be proud of our record in supporting veterans here in the UK.
The Prime Minister has accepted that he made a mistake. He has apologised unequivocally for that. And I think he will be feeling this personally very deeply, because he's a deeply patriotic person.
This was the last time ever there'll be a gathering of veterans on parade in Normandy, and if he's not prepared to go to the international commemoration with the heads of so many different countries overlooking a beach in which our American allies lost thousands of men, that says a lot about him. He is completely disconnected from the centre of this country, and he's proved to me that he basically is not a patriotic leader of the Conservative Party.
That's Nigel Farage, obviously, there, who's just layering all of those patriotic tropes It's that, you know, there he is with all of this, the last time that, that, you know, and he fakes a little bit of oh my God, it's the last time ever. Basically, because everyone's 105 or something. So it's the last ever one. And why he didn't stay for the international celebration, overlooking a beach on which, and he's just, you know, you can kind of hear Land of Hope and Glory playing in the background and Spitfires flying over the thing as he's saying it. And it's, yeah, which leads us nicely on to, let's not forget that Sunak would never have been the leader had it not been for the demise of Boris Johnson, the champion of possibly the most jingoistic act of modern times, the campaign to leave the EU.
Isaac Newton is the most influential scientist in world history. He invented modern physics, first discovered the law of gravity, and laid the scientific foundation for the Industrial Revolution. Nelson and Wellington's leadership saved Britain from invasion and saved Europe from Napoleon's tyranny. Florence Nightingale invented modern nursing. Charles Darwin first developed the theory of evolution, revolutionizing our understanding of human history. James Maxwell first wrote the equations that describe electricity, magnetism, and light. Emmeline Pankhurst won women the right to vote. Churchill's leadership saved Britain, Europe, and the world from Nazism. Nye Bevan created the NHS. Alan Turing helped break the Nazis' secret codes, which shortened World War II. His work on modern digital computers is the basis for the information revolution. These British heroes change the world. Don't believe those who talk Britain down, who say we're too weak to control our own affairs. Let's take control.
There we go.
Lovely straw man at the end there, because I don't remember anyone ever saying we're too weak to control our own affairs.
No.
That was not an argument against Brexit.
It's so good, isn't it? And also, the people that they named, like Emmeline Pankhurst, was jailed, went on hunger strike, she was force-fed, she was beaten, she was arrested several times. Alan Turing forcibly underwent aversion therapy for his homosexuality.
Yeah,
loads of
treated
those. Got
quite
all of
poorly
that.
By their country.
yes. And yet, those are the heroes. Don't let anyone take... Yeah, so that's, for me, the most jingoistic of all. So that's the Leave campaign happening. Boris gets elected in 2019. He does an edit of the speech that he gave on the steps of number 10 against B-roll of the White Cliffs of Dover with the Red Arrow display team flying over, blowing red, white and blue smoke. It's proper Churchillian. Yeah.
Dropping Vera
stuff.
Lynn onto the beach.
Exactly, yeah. And she's saying, we'll meet again. Yeah. So then David Starkey in 2022, on the day that all the letters were being handed in to the 1922 committee to get rid of him, he was saying, the problem is everybody thought that this act was a patriotic act and that he was a patriot. He was all about Britain. And then they decided he wasn't, because he proved that he wasn't. And then Ed Davey on the same day also says, yes, he's been found guilty of misleading Parliament, and the Tories have a patriotic duty to get rid of him. David Starkey said he didn't have the moral fortitude or the intelligence to follow his instincts. I think he probably did follow his instincts, and that's the problem. That he followed his instincts, which was, fuck it, we could just drink what we like and gather together and all that kind of stuff, and get away with it. And now it's their patriotic duty to get rid of him. The thing that actually did for him, I think, is that image of the Queen sitting on her own in Westminster Abbey at the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh on the day that caseloads of wine were being trundled down from Tesco's or wherever they get, they're probably Waitrose. bit more upmarket. So that was the mess that was Partygate. And weirdly, politics is still not acknowledging the utter clusterfuck of Brexit yet. I suspect because Starmer is avoiding being thought to be unpatriotic. The whole, we're not going to do the freedom of movement, we're not going to join the customs union, we're not going to do all of those things that would guarantee an upsurge in growth that we desperately need, because he's fearful of the people that voted for Leave, but who are also Labour voters, will think that he's unpatriotic and therefore won't carry on. So we can't go on without another quick quip from arch jingoist Nigel Farage, who rails against everything that isn't British or doesn't uphold everything great about Britain. Also, because this clip is jaw-droppingly astonishing, and this is in response to the British Social Attitude Survey findings in answer to the question, are you proud or very proud of Britain's history? The yes figure is down from 86% in 2013.
Fuck me. 86% of people in 2013 were proud or very proud of Britain's history. Had they not looked at any of Britain's history?
Not quite. And now, amongst 18 to 24-year-olds in 2024, at the time of this recording, is less than 40%.
I mean, that at least bodes well for Britain's educational system.
Yeah, Nigel's not happy about that. Also, I've tacked on the end, Keir Starmer's adding his thoughts on Nigel Farage's patriotism.
We have got an educational establishment that goes right the way through primary school, secondary school, university, that seems to somehow rejoice in talking down Britain's past. You would have thought we were the only country in the history of mankind that had ever conducted slavery. Far from being the one nation, actually, that ended it and lost a lot of money and a lot of lives driving it out.
Nigel Farage is fawning over Putin. That's not patriotism.
Fucking hell.
You would have thought we were the only country.
Jesus Christ. That is his defence. That is his argument in favour of us being proud of Britain's history, is we weren't the only ones who enslaved people.
And in fact, Jesus Christ. A lot of money away with it.
It cost, it wasn't cheap.
Cost lives.
Giving up all those slaves.
Yeah. So, of course, the date of the high rating survey in 2013 was just after the London Olympics. So I suspect there's a bit of that, because actually, the thing about the opening ceremony of the London Olympics was an appeal to patriotism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it was all about the Industrial Revolution.
Isambard Kingdom Brunel, Isambard and Kingdom Brunel, and all that.
The NHS, all of those things, all of the things that got listed in the reason why we should leave the EU were put on display as the reason why we should be proud of Britain. Tim Berners-Lee, Mr. Bean, Chariots of Fire, which was written by a Greek. But all of that.
Yeah, some of that stuff happened while we were in the EU.
exactly. Yeah. And because the latest survey is post-Brexit, post-Johnson, post-Priti Patel to attempt to deport the Windrush generation, and even post-Farage.
Yeah.
That's, so I finally couldn't resist this. Friend of the show, Lawrence Fox, ran for London Mayor in 2021 and commented on the same flag-based jingoism that beset Starmer.
Why does our flag send Labour politicians and most Conservative politicians into paroxysms of hatred? So this St George's Day, I'm going to reclaim the flag. I kind of like it. It's all of our London and it's all of our freedom, and we should reclaim it. Happy St George's Day, flag shaggers.
That's respect for the flag, isn't it? Who's he reclaiming it from, though?
Well,
is he reclaiming it from racists with bulldogs?
Could be, but there is, ironically, there's a dog barking in the background.
Because I don't think he is. To be fair, football fans, they're the people who fly the most St George crosses.
But
outside of a major football game,
England,
it's mostly skinheads, isn't it?
Yes. Is he reclaiming it from right wing skinheads? He's a fine one to talk, but also I think he's probably reclaiming it from the Tories and the the Labour Party who lambast those people who are proud of it. But they don't, because this is exactly the same time as Starmer is saying, actually, we are quite patriotic, and I'm quite comfortable with using the flag. So I don't know what he's saying.
To some extent, the people who favour the George Cross are uncomfortable with being so inclusive that we fly the Union flag.
Yes. Yeah,
they're like, well, that's a bit woke, isn't it? Including the Scots and the Welsh.
The Scots and the Welsh. Yeah, coming over here, invading our country, all you bloody Saxons. Get back
getting
to where
the plague,
you're from.
Taking it back to Scotland.
Yeah, leave us Angles alone. So, yeah, needless to say, he didn't win the London mayor
election. No, he got like 2%, didn't he? It was pathetic.
Yeah.
I know that you think that I shouldn't still love you. I'll tell you that. But if I didn't say it, well, I'd still have felt it. Where's the Tesla in that? I promise I'm not trying to make your tariffs harder or return to where we were. But I will not go down with this ship, and I won't put my arm up and salute you. There will be no white flag above my door. I am Elon and always will be. I know I left too much mess and destruction to come back again, and I cause nothing but trouble. I understand if you can't talk to Doge again, and if you live by the rules of it's over, then I'm sure that that makes sense. But I will not go down with this ship, and I won't put my arm up and salute you. There will be no white flag above my door. I am Elon and always will be.
Dido there, of course, with White Flag.
Don't get a lot of Dido these days, do you?
No.
Yeah. Haven't heard her for a while. So in The Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective, and our first example this week comes from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yay.
And this is an episode where Dewey is selling chocolate bars for his school and finds a patriotic way of doing it.
Hello, sir.
Sorry, I don't eat candy.
Oh, these aren't candy bars. These are America bars.
What are you talking about?
You know, America bars. Well, actually, I prefer the term freedom bars. You love America, right?
Well, of course I do.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who are hoping we won't do our part.
What do you mean?
You know, people. People who don't have this country's best interest at heart.
So these candy bars help fight terrorism?
With every chocolatey, nougaty bite.
How much are they?
$9.50.
I'll take two.
Thank you.
No, young man, thank you.
Yeah. I love the way he goes, no, $9.50.
Yeah.
Freedom bars.
Why not?
If there are people out there.
Doesn't want chocolate, then sell them freedom.
Sell them freedom. Yeah. Freedom and America. Yeah, they're freedom fries after all.
Just good marketing. So our next example comes from Dinosaurs, the 90s trippy, excellent sitcom featuring dinosaurs. Yeah. And there's an economic downturn in Pangaea.
Earl's paycheck just doesn't stretch as far as it used to.
Times are hard for everyone. A lot of my friends have lost their jobs. I think the economy's really in trouble.
What is that sound I hear?
Is it someone running down our proud nation? Someone spitting on a glorious flag? Oh, then it must be Monica.
She's just stating her opinion, Earl.
Yeah, an unpatriotic, negative, left-wing, wacko opinion.
Are you suggesting we just ignore the problems out there?
As patriotic citizens, it is our duty.
Yeah, so the fallacy obviously being if you're patriotic, you ignore the fact that the economy isn't doing well. That's,
yes. Yeah. 65 million years in the making, this current
Actually,
Trump regime.
This episode of Dinosaur, it's a fairly prescient series as a whole, but this episode in particular, it's 1992, I think this was.
Wow.
And in this one, the economic downturn is very much due to the corruption and inefficiency of the government of Pangaea at the time. But they blame it instead on the four-legged dinosaurs and decide that the solution is to build a wall to keep them over the other side of the swamp.
Whoa! How about that?
So our final example comes from Cheers.
Yay.
And in this episode, Norm is up for a promotion.
Norm!
And his competitor, the person who was also up for promotion, he discovers that guy has been sleeping with the boss's wife. And the other people in the bar are at odds as to whether he should use this information that he's got in order to secure the promotion for himself. And Cliff thinks, yeah, he absolutely should.
Yeah, well, Naomi, this Morrison's an adulterate and shouldn't be allowed to prosper by it. Now, if we let this type of un-American activity go unchecked, before you know it, our leaders will be in chains, our women will be learning how to shot put, and all we vital American males will be force-fed borscht along with generous helpings of Das Kapital.
So, not only should he use this information to better his own career prospects, but if he doesn't,
then the whole of the edifice
going to be
America
bad
will
for America.
Collapse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a slippery slope.
Absolutely, you can't
patriotism.
Allow this kind of un-American thing to continue.
Yeah. Because if you did, wow.
So, before we move on to fake news this week, it's time to talk about QED. Because we mention QED occasionally, literally every episode it comes up.
We bang on about it,
We are not affiliated with QED. We don't get any money for anything involved in it. We're not involved in organising it. We're just big fans.
We're just big fans.
And
yes.
The tickets have been announced for this year, which will be going on sale on the 6th of May at qedcon.org. We would love to see any of you there who would be going along. And if you've been thinking about maybe going along one year and kind of, you know, you'll get round to it eventually.
This is the year.
This is the year. Because the other announcement that has been made is that this is going to be the final QED.
I know. And it's...
I'm devastated.
Because we've only just got into it and Jim has found his tribe.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, this is where I belong.
I look forward to it for six months of the year and then spend the next six months like reveling in how great it was.
Yeah.
And looking forward to when like the tickets are announced for this year's. Yeah. And so, it's the weekend of the 25th of October. I think that's that's the Saturday. So 24th, 25th, 26th. And it's in Manchester as usual. And if you've thought it might be a thing that you might enjoy, I suspect you probably would enjoy it because it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the people who go are great. Like literally everyone we've met there has been really lovely and really nice. Haven't had any kind of bad experience at all with anyone.
And the things that are laid on to the lectures and workshops and presentations and Q&As and
the Friday night quiz and the whole Skeptic Camp on the Friday, which is run by the Skeptics in the Pub online
and
people.
And it's just all about the whole critical thinking community coming together and celebrating the notion of critical thinking. And if there's a time during which critical thinking ought to be celebrated, then it's now. So if you're listening to our podcast and other podcasts in this realm, then it is exactly the thing that you would like. It opens your eyes up to all sorts of other podcasts, podcasters, subjects.
Authors. Got so many great books from the QED in the past.
Not least Jim's book was available last QED.
It was, proudly in that.
Yes. Cadre. Yeah. We would thoroughly recommend that you go.
Definitely. Yeah.
And if you do go, invite me to us. Yeah.
Say hi to us. Come up and say hi, because that would be great. We would really, really love to meet you.
Yeah.
It's always been positive and fun when people have done that in the past.
Yeah, a little bit scary when we do it to other people.
A little bit weird.
But, you know.
Excellent. Really, really love talking to people who do that. And I find it hard to go up and talk to people.
Yeah.
So people coming to me is great.
To us, it's quite good. Yeah.
But this year, I'm going to have to make myself because I won't ever get another chance.
That's it.
So I'm going to be putting myself out there this year. I'm going to be making a real effort to talk to people.
Yeah.
Because this is it. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Yes.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game. I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Because if you truly called yourself an upholder of British fair play, you know, English fortitude, Scots diligence and Welsh integrity, you'd admit that the scoring system is a fine example of the luck of the Irish and return it to the land of hope and glory and bury it in the sceptred isle soil of this green and pleasant land where it belongs.
Well, I think this is a game for the people from the land of the free and the home of the brave, and you have to be bold to win this game.
Yeah.
So the thing about these three statements,
right?
Often when the statements involve stuff which makes you say what the fuck,
right? Yeah.
I can give some context or some explanation.
Yes.
I'm not going to be able to do that on this occasion. Because I haven't a fucking clue what he's talking about.
Okay.
I can give you...
Why?
I can tell you where it comes from.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But that's about the level of explanation I can give as to what was going through his adult mind when he said these things. So this was during a cabinet meeting that he had. It was one of his kind of North Korean-style cabinet meetings that he had where everyone praises him. And the head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, had just talked.
Yeah.
Because they all went around giving their examples of what they've been doing recently and how great Trump is.
Right.
And then Trump started talking about power plants to Lee Zeldin. And I don't know why or what any of this means.
Okay.
So.
But here they are.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Statement number one. You have a lot of applications for approvals for power plants, which are going to really power the regular plants, and they're going to be right next to each other because we can't rely on our grid. It's old and it's tired and it's, you know, very, very subject to being attacked, whether by rain or by bombs or by anything else.
Okay. Attacked by rain or bombs.
Sure.
Yeah. The weather or our armaments. Yeah.
Statement number two.
Okay.
People can't believe when I tell them. They say, sir, I didn't have any idea this was happening, but it is happening. Every day the power plants are under threat, but this is part of why we have to have more, and in more places, in some places, in the same places, because the ones that are already there aren't really producing any more.
Okay, and in more places, some places, same places.
And statement number three.
You're right, yeah.
We're letting people build their own power plants. And these are, a lot of them, being built with the AI and beyond the AI, chips. And we're letting them build their own power and never been done before. And we're going to get it done quickly and approved quickly. As part of a plant, they'll have a sort of be their own power company.
Okay, the AI chips. Okay. It's old and it's tired, you know, very subject to being attacked. Okay. Regular plants, they're going to be right next to each other. Oh, I see what you're saying there. Yeah, so we're going to have the new ones and the old ones next to each other because sometimes they're in the same places because the ones that are already there aren't. Got two with threats and same places and one with AI. One's got Sir in it. Oh, man. So that's the taunting tell. So they're going, yeah, pick me. So whether by rain or by bombs or anything else, whether that's you or whether it's Sir, I didn't have any idea, Okay, so are they under threat or are they being attacked by bombs? So the other thing is number two is fairly ordinary compared with the other two. So I suspect that's the one. I think number two is the one you made up.
Okay. So yeah. If the other two, which are you more convinced by?
The AI chips.
Okay.
Don't know why.
And number three?
Yeah.
Is real.
We're letting people build their own power plants, and these are a lot of them being built with the AI and beyond the AI chips. And we're letting them build their own power and never been done before. And we're going to get it done quickly and approved quickly as part of a plant. They'll have a sort of be their own power company.
Not a clue. Not a clue what he's talking about.
No, no.
What the fuck? They're being built with AI and beyond the AI chips.
Chips.
Because chips, as everyone knows,
it's beyond it's the like, AI.
It's, yeah, it's better than it's, be, it's
better than
better
AI.
Than AI. Outside of AI,
yeah, or it's a California Highway Patrol. Yeah. What?
Yeah. Okay. Not clear. Not
okay.
Clear
and
that's...
we're letting them. We're I letting think build their own.
One theory that I've read of right. What he's talking
what
about. Is,
what the fuck?
Because there's like about? Fan theories, you know. There's like you know, yeah. like with Severance. Where yeah, ooh, yeah. What's really going on and people, everyone's got their own ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's similarly with Trump's brain, there's people on the internet who try and figure out what they reckon is going to happen
actually
next.
Happening. Right.
One theory was that he's talking about AI, like companies that use AI, because it's very power hungry, building their own power plants to power their
to
own
power
AI
their own AI
processing thing. That's as far as anyone got. Doesn't explain the chips bit.
No.
Or any of the rest of it.
Or any
so
of it.
You also think that number one is real.
Yeah.
And number one.
Yeah.
Is real.
You have a lot of applications for approvals for power plants, which are going to really power the regular plants, and they're going to be right next to each other. Because we can't rely on our grid. It's old and it's tired. And it's, you know, very, very subject to being attacked, whether by rain or by bombs or by anything else.
Sure, those are among the things that attack power plants. Top two are rain and bombs.
Rain and bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subject to being attacked by rain or by bombs. Yeah. So because when you talk about rain, you talk about it attacking things. Yeah.
That's one of its main jobs.
To attack stuff. Yeah. Well, that's why he obviously thought, I've used the wrong verb there, so I need to stick the bombs in. There used to be a comic strip. Have I talked about this before? There used to be a comic strip. In a comic called Wizard and Chips.
Oh, you're talking about the numbskulls.
The numbskulls. Yeah. So that's what's happening in Trump's brain. There's a whole bunch of, like, they're sort of little bean characters with arms and legs and faces in the middle of their bodies that would run
the brain and
the brain. Yeah, the brain department. And the mouth department. So obviously, words have been shoveled down to the mouth. Departed via some sort of rudimentary chute.
Yeah, if you don't know British comics of the 70s and 80s, yes. But are aware of quickly cancelled 90s sitcoms in America, think Herman's Head.
There you go. Yes, yes, yes. When that came on, I was thinking, hang on a minute, this is the Numbskulls. Yes.
So, yeah, what the fuck does he mean by... power plants, which are going to power
the
regular plants.
Regular plants.
Because, I think the thing about power plants, I think I'm right in saying they get the power from
the thing
they're doing.
They're doing, yeah. They're kind of self-contained.
Yeah, yeah.
Their purpose
if they're not putting out more power than they're drawing, I say close them.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you need to build another power plant
to power
next
the,
to
power
the power
plant.
To power the power plant, then you're not getting
there's a lack of efficiency there.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, there's the conservation of energy and all that kind of stuff, but you know, rules of physics aside.
And also then you've got just twice as many power plants to be attacked by rain or bombs.
Exactly.
because they're subjective.
You're
to
doubling
that.
The target, if anything.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because you could be really inaccurate with either your rain or your bomb.
You're going to hit one of them, aren't you?
You're going to hit one of them, either of them. It's like playing battleships.
They're right next to each other. Yeah, you want to put them at either. You want to put them at ends and in a different configuration.
Yeah. Oh, no, you've sunk my power plant. They're very subject to being attacked by anything else.
Anything else, yeah.
Anything else. Dogs, seagulls. Cats, seagulls, cutlery, anything. Yeah. You know, so, sushi, yeah. Anything. They're all very subject.
You were correct in that number two was the one I made up.
Well,
I did think it had been long enough since I'd used the sir that maybe... You might think, well, you know, he does say that sometimes, so that might be a real one.
Yeah.
But
It was the quiet one of the three, that one, and it was...
Well, one of our social contestants at least disagrees with you on that, because Scott on Patreon says, oh my fucking God, two is definitely real because it makes no sense whatsoever.
Like the other two do?
Yeah, I know.
Right.
He says it has the sir requirement too. He's not playing 5D chess, he's eating the checkers. three, yes, but at least he did not call it A1. Brown sauce, anyone?
Nice.
Yeah, because Linda McMahon has recently been calling it A1 when she's talking about using AI in schools.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I think one is fake because as shit as it is, it actually makes a point. And the fact that it makes a point is pretty generous. It's because Mark is pretty clever.
Yeah.
Rene Z says, this seems to be about bringing back good old clean coal. I think number two is fake news because Jim threw a sir in to confuse us.
Yeah. Well spotted.
Yeah. Anders says, I'm going to do the Trump reasoning here and treat this as a zero-sum game. If I am number one, it should mean I am winning. And by that logic, anyone not picking number one is behind and thus losing. I guess number two should break even. But I'm here to win it. Number one is the one Jim made up. Solid win.
Well, there you go.
So,
And that's it. Yeah, and if you're choosing any other one, then you're an American.
Absolutely.
Or wherever Anders is from.
Richard Thunderhopkins said, I think number three is fake news. I don't know why. I just hate what the GOP has done to America. You used to be cool, America. Sad face.
I don't know why. I don't know, it's fair enough. Yeah. Well, it makes as much sense as what Trump is actually saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
And on Facebook, Andrew says, number one plus tariff equals number two plus the price of gold equals number three minus the price of a Tesla share means we're still on number three. Divide by the S&P 500. Oh, fuck it. Number two.
Yay, I've seen that formula somewhere before. Yes.
And finally, Christine Fletcher says, oh my God, I think I've lost the will to live. Number one outlines good reasons to replace him. Just substitute grid for president. How about number three as fake?
Okay.
There we go.
We're just tired and very subject to being attacked, whether by rain or bonked by anything else.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Tariffs on Penguins and Not a Logical Fallacy.
Oh my God.
Because it was Liberation Day.
Yeah. We felt a lot more liberated.
Yeah.
From I don't know what, from
reality,
sense, business acumen, global financial stability. We're liberated from all of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, our last episode came out the day before that, and we knew it was coming. He'd announced it was coming, but he hadn't announced what any of the tariffs were going to be. They said they were working on them, and he had a pretty good idea at that point what they were going to be. I call bullshit on that because they clearly made them up at the last minute.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how much AI was involved in making them up at the last minute, but probably a bit.
Well, interesting, because if they shoved into ChatGPT, you know, what would the impacts be of having all of these made-up reciprocal tariffs? It would have surely gone away and scraped the massively long report from last time. He was talking about tariffs, and various financial advisors wrote this 46-page, I think, thing on what the impacts of the tariffs would be, what any reciprocal tariffs would be, and all that kind of stuff, and what it should be based on, rather than just coming up with a whole bunch of numbers and then dividing them by two.
Yeah, I think that is the best argument for AI not having been involved in this, is that AI would have done a better job.
Yes, because it would have found published documents that were freely available on the government website.
If asked to look at reciprocal tariff rates, it might have factored in tariffs that other countries charge the US. That might have been part of the calculation, because that's what reciprocal means.
Yes.
But that's despite the fact that these were called reciprocal tariffs repeatedly, that isn't anything to do with how they worked out the figures. Because they held up this big kind of cardboard board with all of the countries, with several countries on, that really looked like a prop from a daytime quiz show. And, and it had various numbers. As you say, they were they worked out numbers and then they divided them by two for no reason.
Except for one or two, which weren't like that, just to make it look a bit more genuine.
So there were things like 32% for Thailand, 49% for Cambodia, 26% for India, 90% for Vietnam, which then, was halved. And those were supposedly reciprocal tariffs based on what these countries were charging America. And obviously, we've talked before about how Trump doesn't understand what tariffs are or what trade is.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, I'm sure you know this by now already, it's been all over everywhere, was they simply worked out the trade deficit with these other countries. And this is just goods, not services. They worked out how much in goods the US sells to those other countries, and then how much the US buys from those other countries in goods.
Yeah.
Like, took the second number away from the first number, which is the wrong way round to do it, and then divided it by the import number.
Yeah.
The second number. And that gives you a percentage. For some countries, because the US has a trade surplus with those countries, they sell more than they import.
Yeah.
That would have been a negative number. So for those countries, they just said 10% then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Again, because he is, as we talked about last time, had so many different reasons for doing tariffs, it's hard to nail down whether this fits any of those reasons, because the reasons were mutually exclusive at the time.
Yeah.
But if his reason was to encourage US manufacturing, for example, it would be insane to put a tariff on countries that you have a trade surplus with. Because what you're doing is saying, we are going to punish countries that import stuff that we make.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a fucking terrible idea to do that.
Because you're making the things and then you're going to sell them to that country. And if you sell more things to them than you buy from them, he's still slapping a tariff on that.
Yeah. Another way that using these kinds of tariffs would not help US manufacturing is putting a blanket tariff on everything.
Yeah.
Because what that means is you can't buy components from other countries.
Yeah.
Like, just recently, having now, like, spoiler, having paused the tariffs for 90 days on most of these countries, or at least brought them down to 10%, he is now also announced on, because he's kept China's tariffs ridiculously high, but he's announced that it doesn't count for smartphones and laptops. Because everyone was like, oh, now my iPhone's going to be really expensive.
Because there'll be other things that obviously, I think he said, obviously there will be things that will be not subject, will be exempt.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, well, how are you going to work out which ones are exempt? And he said, I'll do it by intuition.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking, okay, Tesla assembled in the US, manufactured all the parts, probably manufactured in China.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing with the smartphone and tablet and computer exemption, and PC exemption.
And other companies that donated to Trump's election campaign.
But it's that the smartphones and the laptops are now exempt, at least temporarily. Howard Lutnick says that's just a temporary pause.
Right.
But the components to make those things are not exempt. So that actively avoids anyone choosing to make those in the US. You can't import the components yeah. and manufacture them, put them together in the US. So that would be the most expensive way of doing it, when you can buy them fully assembled from China now without
yeah.
having the 145% tariff.
Yeah.
So it yeah. seems like maybe he's not going for manufacturing in the US.
Yeah, because actually, if he was going for manufacturing in the US, he wouldn't have paused the tariffs.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah, because one of the things is, if you want people to invest in building factories to make things in the US,
yeah,
they have to know that those tariffs are permanent.
Right.
Because it takes some time more to build than a factory.
Yeah.
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 So if you keep changing your fucking mind every 12 days,
yeah,
at no point is it worth any company ever deciding to build a factory in the US.
Do you know what? We'll just move to the US.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't have the tariffs work as both a negotiation tool to get other countries to change their trade practices with you and also a way of getting manufacturing back into the US. Because for the first one, you have to say, these things can change. If you do what we want, we will bring the tariffs down. And for the second one, you have to say, these things won't change.
Yeah. Yes. So therefore, you've got to move your manufacturing to the to the US.
Yeah.
But
so that's
but
all
also
bullshit.
And also what we've got to do is not charge a tariff on those countries we have a trade surplus with, because otherwise how are you going to sell the things that you were now manufacturing?
Insane. Yeah, and also just not, because you do it in such a stupid fucking way, putting one of the highest tariffs on a country like Vietnam, which is, again, if you're trying to avoid all of the stuff coming through China, Vietnam is the biggest alternative trade partner for the US. Mm-hmm. The reason there is such a big trade deficit with Vietnam is because the US imports a fuck ton of stuff from Vietnam.
Because
they do that so that they can avoid getting that stuff from China. So if you make that stuff more expensive, you're avoiding that disparity and making it easier for people to do business with bigger companies in China.
Yeah.
It's just fucking insane.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't think about it at all.
Yeah, do you think? Yeah.
But when they're accused of not thinking about it, when economists went, hang on, you've just done this, haven't
you've
you?
Just made this
for
up.
All these tariffs, you've just done that simple formula. They went, oh, no, actually, we used a very complicated formula with Greek letters and stuff in it. It's really, you wouldn't even understand.
And we used the asterisk
instead
of the multiplication sign
symbol.
Because that's what we type into. Yeah, the actual fuck.
So they showed this formula, which then economists and mathematicians went, well, yeah, that this formula is literally what we said it was. You've just added a couple of other things that cancel out.
To make it look more complicated.
Yeah. They added two variables, one of which they decided was worth 4 and the other was worth 1/4 and multiplied them together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everything else is just the things people said the formula was.
There was a brilliant breakdown by a mathematician that I posted on our Facebook group. He concluded at the end, he said, oh, actually, so what this works out is a 10% rise in inflation for all American consumers.
Yeah, yeah, because the base level is 10%.
Yeah.
If your tariff figure that they've calculated would be lower than 10%, they set it at 10, including if you have a surplus. So, yeah, it's 10% increase in price on everything, more on some countries.
So do you think that the actual stated purpose was so that other countries would kiss his ass, like he said? He was very
I haven't seen any evidence that's happened at all.
No more evidence than he said, oh yeah, it's working very well, we're gaining $4 billion a day.
Oh, there's so many things to talk about here, but yes, he has said that. There's first of all, that's not true. I think he said $2 billion a day.
Oh right, yeah.
But the thing
that's a smaller untruth, I guess. Yeah, he's got no more evidence backing it up than 4.
The thing is, most of that money, like, it wouldn't start to be charged yet because the tariff specifically exempted goods that were already on their way. And it takes a couple of weeks to for ships to get from China to the US. Yeah. So there's no way they would have charged any tariffs on any of that stuff yet. Also, because it's so confusing and arbitrary, there have been reports from ports which have been taking in imports from other countries that have said they're not even charging them yet.
Right.
Importers are saying we haven't paid any extra.
Yeah.
And the ports are saying we don't know what to charge these countries. We don't know what the rules are or if they're going to change by this afternoon or what.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no evidence actually any extra money has been taken in at all. But what it has done is it wiped like $6 trillion off the stock market.
Yeah.
Its biggest single day loss since the outbreak of COVID, basically.
I mean, it's the size of a thing that was the downfall of Liz Truss,
you know,
with her unfunded, unsubstantiated tax cuts.
But the thing is, when that happened to it was it's bigger than that when what happened to Liz Truss. And when it happened to Liz Truss, she fired her Chancellor of the Exchequer and then resigned 2 days later. Whereas he doubled down and said, this is fine. This is exactly how it's supposed to be going.
It's all fine. Sometimes you've got to take the medicine to cure the ill.
Yeah.
And that's, yes. And several economists and Republicans were saying, yeah, what if the medicine actually kills you?
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's that kind of somber. Now, who was it that said it's a bit like Trump giving you a noogie on your head and then stopping with the noogie and saying, you see how much better it is without the noogie?
It's a bully's tactic. That's basically it. And you said, like, what is the purpose of this? And the purpose is to make him feel good, basically, I think. That's basically all it is, to make him seem like a tough guy.
Yeah.
But it's not doing that because it's obviously an idiotic thing to do and it causes massive problems. So he panics and backs down.
Yeah. And it caused,
because he's not a tough guy. He's an idiot.
And it caused Musk to accuse the equivalent of the Chancellor of being a moron.
Well, being not the equivalent. Peter Navarro, his trade advisor. Yeah.
Right.
Not the Treasury Secretary or anything like that.
Right.
But yeah, Navarro is the architect really of the tariffs. He's why Trump, who knows nothing about international trade, thinks tariffs are a good idea, because Navarro, the only economist who thinks tariffs are a good idea, was the basically Trump, when he was running in 2016, asked Jared Kushner to find him an economist who he could use that guy's kind of ideas as his economic platform.
Right.
And he said, find someone who's tough on China.
Right.
You know, he wanted to be seen as tough on China. Jared Kushner, his method for finding an economist who could be the next potential president's advisor on the economy was to go on Amazon and look at book covers.
Wow.
In the economics section.
And find one that says tough on China, tough on the causes of China.
He found one called Death by China.
Right. That's the guy for me.
Which was written by Peter Navarro.
Yeah.
A fringe economist who thinks tariffs are a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, he got in touch with Peter Navarro and said, look, Trump's running to be president. Do you want to be his economic advisor? And Peter Navarro went, yeah, absolutely. Because no one had ever taken him seriously before. And Navarro's had written a few books about economics and about tariffs. And he bases his love of tariffs on the economic philosophy of a guy called Ron Vara.
Mm-hmm.
Only that guy doesn't exist.
Oh.
Because Ron Vara is an anagram of Navarro.
Nice.
And Peter Navarro made him up so that he would have a prestigious economist to quote who agrees with him on tariffs.
Brilliant.
So basically, this lying idiot is the reason that Trump thinks tariffs are a good way to run an economy.
Oh, wow.
So that's why this has happened.
And that's why Musk kind of said, yeah, he's a moron.
Yes.
Because of a stack of bricks.
Absolutely.
And that's,
yes,
that's
I agree with
insulting
Musk
to bricks. I think one of the other reasons that Trump backed down was because if he kept going with it, the next one to be called a moron by Musk would have been Trump.
Well, as you might expect from Trump's White House, people defended the decision to do the tariffs right up until the point at which Trump backed down. And then they defended his backing down
this is the plan all along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important, I think, to mention the Penguins first, because it seems like maybe the way that they made their list of countries to tariff was by looking at all of the top-level domains.
Right.
Because it isn't based on who does trade with the US, certainly.
No.
But it does seem to track with the countries that have TLDs. So one of them was the Heard and McDonald Islands, which doesn't do a lot of trade with the US because there aren't any people or ports or manufacturing facilities. I mean, people's the main thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It is people
that do trade.
Yeah, it's just penguins. Yeah. But they got a 10% tariff because apparently they have a trade surplus with because they buy more stuff from America. The penguins, they've got a shared Amazon account. And,
yeah, or at least something from Penguin Books America.
They've got a single subscription to Club Penguin, I imagine.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the thing is, Howard Lutnick, the incredibly sycophantic Commerce Secretary, was asked about this, as you might expect.
Yeah.
When the administration tariffs an island only populated by seabirds.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, this is just ridiculous that people are saying this is a bad thing, because this was entirely intentional. And it's about closing loopholes. Because what you can't have happen, you see, is if you put big tariffs on a country, what you don't want to do is to still export their stuff to the US, but through another country that has lower tariffs. Right? Or no tariffs. So you don't want to leave a loophole for people to be able to do that.
Whereby Australia could ship stuff through their penguin port.
Yeah.
But all the penguin handlers.
Which is a good reason if you are only given a second to think about it. You know, given that he came up with that off the top of his head when he was asked the question on TV, it's not a bad answer.
Yeah,
if you think about it at all, it's a terrible answer, because apart from the fact that the Heard and McDonald Islands don't have ports and therefore couldn't ship a thing for another country, that makes giving countries different tariff levels entirely stupid.
Yeah,
because if there is a country that has a 10% tariff, every country with higher tariffs could just go through that country.
Shove everything through it.
Yeah. So that immediately you've been foiled. There's also the fact that the EU had a higher tariff than the UK. And because of Brexit being a thing, Northern Ireland is, for trade purposes, technically both part of the UK and the EU.
Yeah.
So all of the EU could ship everything through Northern Ireland completely legally.
And
it would be fine.
Tariff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And somebody pointed out at one of the hearings that, okay, in the 48 years that we haven't had tariffs prior to this year, when there was an emergency that Trump declared, we've had relationships with all of these countries, and the economy of the US has gone up 255% over that time. It's been boom. It's been kind of boom times. Where is the emergency that Trump used as an excuse to be able to bring in tariffs by executive order? And also, why, when we've got a trade surplus with Australia, why have we put tariffs on them when it's been booming with them? And also that whole thing about Bangladesh. I think Bangladesh in the list, 74% tariff. They sell more stuff to the US of a certain type than they buy from the US.
Not super surprising, given the fact that there's a lot more people in the US who consume a lot more than people in Bangladesh.
Exactly. And so if the trade imbalance is that they buy, well, let's say it's foodstuffs from the US, but they sell finished articles of clothing, if Trump is trying to redress the balance, Bangladesh is not going to want to buy finished items of clothing from the US because they will be very expensive. They can't afford to do it.
Yeah.
And the US doesn't want to buy foodstuffs from Bangladesh because there's nothing that Bangladesh produces that they want.
Yeah.
So it's just how...
Yeah. No, it's just...
It's how trade works.
Absolutely, yeah. Trump doesn't understand why money exists.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yes.
This is why money exists as a concept. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I edit videos for the company that I work for.
Yeah.
And so they give me money for that.
Yeah.
I don't want to buy stuff from them.
Yeah. Yes.
But
yes.
So I do want to buy stuff from other people. So yeah. I get to use the money that I got for selling my video editing skills to buy food and clothes and have a house.
Yeah, and equipment that allows you to edit more videos.
Yeah. And that's a good system because it means I don't have to negotiate with Tesco's to see if they want any video editing work done in order that I can buy
in exchange for food.
Chicken.
Yes. Yes.
That's a good system. Yeah. It means you can use your skills to get money that you can then transfer to other people for goods and services.
Yes. And
Trump thinks that the only acceptable relationship between two people or two organisations or countries or whatever is to have an equal barter system.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't need money. If there wasn't a trade deficit or trade surplus between two countries, no money would need to change hands at all.
Yeah.
You could swap the goods you have that they want with the goods they have that you want.
Yeah.
It's just a fundamental misunderstanding of how, not even misunderstanding, lack of curiosity about trade and money. He just doesn't get it.
He just characterizes
it as a loss.
Yeah, as the US has been ripped off for years and years and years. Well, where's the emergency? Well, the emergency, and they keep saying the emergency we inherited from Biden. Well, really, the economy was doing terribly
well
under Biden. Yeah,
there wasn't a problem. There is a problem now, and it's not just with the stock market. The problem, you know, he crashed the stock market single-handedly.
Yep.
And in announcing the 90-day pause
after
the stock market tanked, that it did have a bump, and then everyone was saying how great it was, how you know, all the Republicans were saying how great, you know, how much it had gone up. And John Barrasso, Republican senator, was saying, you've got the market seeing your brilliance, he said to Trump. But they didn't go up as much as they lost. So they're still lower. They're still significantly lower before he crashed it.
Yeah.
And since before he crashed it. And it's not just the stock market. If it was just the stock market, that's really bad for a lot of people because a lot of people's pensions are in the stock market. But it's not just the stock market because companies that have nothing to do with the stock market and have nothing to do with importing and exporting, companies that do regular stuff aren't going to be investing in stuff, aren't going to be taking risks, opening new branches, hiring new people because the economy is in a state of chaos.
Yep.
They don't know what's going to be happening next year. They don't know how strong consumer confidence is going to be in 6 months' time because they don't know what Trump's going to do next.
Yep.
So companies that would be investing and putting money into the economy and expanding and hiring people aren't going to do that right now because it's too dangerous a time.
Because that relies on stability.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only people that benefit from it being unstable are people with large amounts of money that invest on the stock market.
Yeah, and who maybe get insider tips if they're on Truth Social.
Insider tips like, this is a great time to buy.
Yeah.
Just before you...
That kind of thing.
Yeah, so is it just about the people that invested in him, that are loyal to him, that gave him money, he then tanked the market in order to give them an opportunity to sell all their stocks and then make a lot of money and then also buy them at a low price. And then he could guarantee that the market would go up and they would make a lot of money.
Well, there was a significant spike in trading in between him announcing this is a great time to buy at 9:37, you know, just after the stock market had opened on the day that he paused the tariffs.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
Yeah.
As I said, the people around him are saying that it's actually he's just doing great things. He's doing 5D chess. Scott Bessent said that his decision to pause the tariffs had nothing to do with the markets. It was his strategy all along. And Trump later said, "Nah, that's not true. I was watching the market and I decided that people were getting yippy," he said.
Yeah.
They also said that it was because so many countries had reached out to them. More than 75 countries had called them. The phone was ringing off the hook with people begging to do a deal and kiss Trump's ass. And when reporters said, "Oh, which countries?" they were like, "Yeah, just lots of countries.
Lots of them. Yeah, it's many, not, yeah, many, many.
Not saying
of all the ones on the list.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, loads of them.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah."
And Caroline Leavitt said, "Obviously, you know, you you reporters who've just been reporting on the fact that he's completely single-handedly tanked the stock market and ruined the economy, obviously you missed the art of the deal. Now, I haven't read all of the art of the deal. I have skimmed it.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any
reference
in
to...
there about tanking. I mean, like Goldfinger.
Yeah.
There's bits in that
yeah.
of destroying gold reserves in Fort Knox
yeah.
to make Goldfinger's own personal stock of gold worth more.
More valuable. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the art of the deal. It's more that kind of method, isn't it? If you yeah. ruin yeah. everyone else's economy and do yeah. a bit of insider trading yourself, then you personally enrich yourself and your yeah. rich friends at the expense of the world. And that yeah. appears to be the thing he's doing. I don't think he mentioned it in Art of the Deal.
No, because that would just be Chapter 3, be a Bond villain.
Yeah.
He is Midas, isn't he? He's
turd Midas. Everything he touches turns to shit.
Turns to shit. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
When you base your immigration policy on the old Silicon Valley move fast and break things model, it's inevitable that you're going to make a few mistakes. But it's okay, because they'll just work themselves out with the help of the courts. And it's not like any of the people who matter are going to have their lives disrupted in any way. Just, you know, those people. Like, say, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Salvadoran immigrant who was legally living in Maryland with his wife and 5-year-old son, who are both US citizens. Back in 2019, he was picked up by police and accused of being an MS-13 member based partly on the fact that he was wearing a Chicago Bulls hat and a hoodie. Don't understand that. The judge in that case not only ruled that he wasn't a member of the gang, but granted him withholding of removal status to block any future deportation to El Salvador because he, in fact, had previously testified against another gang who had attempted to recruit him, and if he was sent back, he would be in danger. When they picked him up in March this year, ICE were apparently aware of this status and still deported Abrego Garcia to El Salvador, where he was put in a maximum security prison with gang members. When it was challenged in court, the Trump administration did admit that his deportation was an administrative error and immediately set about bringing him back to the US. Oh, sorry, I read that wrong. That should be fought tooth and nail to keep him in the dangerous prison for terrorists, even though they accept he's innocent. In district court, the Justice Department argued that the court had no jurisdiction to order his return because he was no longer in US custody. Abrego Garcia's lawyer quite reasonably pointed out that if this was the case, then no immigration laws mean anything because the government can deport whoever they want, wherever they want, whenever they want, and no court can do anything about it once it's done. The judge ordered the government to get him back, and the Justice Department lawyer was fired because he admitted the deportation had been a mistake. Meanwhile, the DOJ appealed to the Fourth Circuit to keep the innocent man in a notoriously brutal foreign prison. The Fourth Circuit judges denied the appeal, calling it unconscionable. So they appealed to the fucking US Supreme Court, who ruled unanimously that he should be returned to the USA. Unanimously. This Supreme Court. Even Clarence Thomas. Do you know how badly you have to have screwed up as a Republican that even Clarence Thomas won't cover for you? So hopefully he'll be home soon, but he's damn sure not the only one. It's almost like there needs to be some kind of due process to make sure this shit doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. Like somebody isn't saving the USA as an excuse to be above the law. Yeah. If it crosses the US border illegally, it's our job to stop it. Learn more about our mission at ICE.gov. So ran a graphic promotion for Immigration and Customs Enforcement on X. Fair enough, short and succinct, except the words ran atop graphic stencil words behind, listing not only people, money, products, but ideas. As I'm sure we've mentioned before, the fiction novel 1984 turned 75 years old last year, and the worst crime of all committed by Winston Smith, amongst others, is, of course, thought crime. Coming over here thinking those thoughts, what do they think they're thinking? The rapidly taken down post by ICE comes a day after the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees the agency, announced it would be surveilling the social media of foreign students and immigrants applying for permanent status or other immigration benefits to the United States for alleged anti-Semitic activity in a push to protect the homeland from extremists and terrorist sympathizers. It's too late, guys. They're running the White House. ICE told Politico that the post was put up in error, and that he's drafting a new post that will include intellectual property, not ideas.
What were you thinking? Anyone could think whatever they like, whoever's property it is. Unless perhaps you think AI companies ought not to contravene the intellectual properties rights of the artists and writers they're scraping. We regret any confusion that this error may have caused, I spokesman Mike Alvarez said. Our number one goal is to provide accurate information to the public. Though it is accurate that Trump has barred the Associated Press from covering some events at the White House due to the Newswire's refusal to use the name Gulf of America and revoked visas for pro-Palestinian activists from college campuses across the country. On Wednesday, Trump ordered the Department of Justice to investigate two administration aides from his first term who have been sharply critical of him. His memorandum for one of those aides, Christopher Krebs, who at the time had pushed back against false narratives about the 2020 election, alleges Krebs engaged in the censorship of disfavored speech. Was he censoring it, or was his disfavored speech in contravention of a censorship? Of course, we all know from the Ministry of Truth that Trump won in 2020. He had always won. He's always the winner. Everything is all right. The struggle is finished. We love Big Trumper. We have always loved Big Trumper.
Elon Musk announced at Thursday's cabinet meeting that he expected the work done by Doge would result in $150 billion of savings this financial year. Yes, that is a little bit less than the $1 trillion in savings he promised just last month, and even less than the $2 trillion he estimated prior to the election. But you see, now he's had a chance to actually look at how everything works, and it turns out the only way you can get to $1 trillion is by lying about everything, and people keep fact-checking him. So $150 billion it is. But hey, that's almost as much as the $154 billion that Trump has spent so far, over and above what Biden had spent at this point in his presidency. So that efficiency is going really well. One way Musk's presence has helped Trump is that everyone in his administration is being a lot more careful about saying anything negative, because they're all pretty sure they're being spied on by Doge. According to a Guardian report, a senior official at the Department of Veterans Affairs warned employees in an email that virtual meetings were being secretly recorded and anyone dissatisfied with Donald Trump's decision should be careful about voicing their opinions. Meanwhile, State Department staffers had started using white noise machines in their offices or even turned on an office break room sink to muffle conversations in case of nearby microphones. I've worked in a lot of different offices, and honestly, that just sounds like a totally healthy workplace where people are definitely going to be capable of going about their daily work in a productive way rather than constantly stressed that they're going to get fired for complaining the vending machine ate their dollar. In a way, this kind of helps to explain why every single person in the administration is doing such a terrible job. When you start by hiring them based on loyalty rather than competence, and then spend every working hour making them prove their loyalty under laboratory conditions, you get bullshit like the whole tariff debacle.
In more practical demonstrations of the thought police at work, a Florida high school teacher lost her job after calling a student by an alternative name without parental permission. Jesus H. fucking Christ. No, that's not their alternative name. That's just how I'm feeling about it. Melissa Calhoun had taught in Brevard County for 11 years when she ran headlong into a state rule that bars school staff from deviating from students' legal names without written parental permission. The rule applies to students who choose an alternative name because of a change in gender identity, as well as those who might want to use a nickname. In this case, Calhoun was respecting the wish of a student whose legal name is associated with girls. One of the student's parents complained to the school district, which investigated the matter. The teacher admitted to knowing using an alternative name without permission, district spokeswoman Janet Murnahan said in a statement. The school district supports parents' rights to be the primary decision makers in their children's lives, and Florida law affirms their right to be informed. Teachers, like all employees, are expected to follow the law. The parents are the number one decision makers for the children. That's why we send out the form. That's why the State Board of Education made the rules, school board member Katya Campbell added. Asked about the rights of the students, she said it was not the district's place to interfere in family relationships unless we legally have a reason to. But it's fine, apparently, to interfere in the work of teachers connecting with students who on average spend more time at school than they do at home. Not only is this a direct attack on educators who support trans students, it's also an indicator of the bureaucratic overreach of anti-transgender policy. Brian Dittmeyer, Director of Public Policy for GLSEN, an advocacy group for LGBTQ students, added, a teacher could potentially be fired for calling a student Tim instead of Timothy. Oh, yes, indeed. How many times has the Cheeto Benito called the champion of the law from which the parental authorization from deviation of the student's legal name form derives, Ron DeSantis, a fucking nickname? Well, now we know why poor little aggrieved De Sanctimonious is waging a war on woke on behalf of his traumatized inner eight-year-old who never got connected with by any teacher because he's an unreconstructed fucking asshole. Now that's a nickname to conjure with.
The Trump administration is planning to close all weather and climate labs and slash the budget of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration because its programs are misaligned with the expressed will of the American people. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it appearing on the ballot in November, but apparently the expressed will of the American people is that they'd rather be surprised by hurricanes rather than knowing when and where they're going to happen. Being alerted to flash floods or tornadoes is woke, probably. But it's not just short-term weather information that's on the chopping block. The Trump White House also doesn't want to know anything about changes to the climate, which famously can't hurt you if you don't look at it. So they're also ending funding for the body that produces climate reports for the federal government every 4 years. The US Global Change Research Program was due to release its next report in 2027, but it's not really needed now that the EPA administrator is Lee Zeldin, who reckons we can deal with greenhouse gases just by saying they're harmless. In a way, I can kind of see Trump's point of view on this one. If you're going to spend the next few years ignoring climate change or actively making it worse, why would you want to pay for a report showing what a bad idea that was? Cancelling it now just makes sense.
Moral vacuumed, Botox-frozen love child of Pretty Patel, Cher and Elvira, Laura Loomer, proud Islamophobe and pro-white nationalist, whose endorsed claims that the 9/11 terrorist attacks were an inside job, alleges that the deep state manipulates the weather to influence elections and spread conspiracy theories implying that the FBI let school shootings happen in election years to help the Democrats push gun control, has finally been ostracized by all in government and excommunicated from all social media platforms as a result of her unchecked racism. Nah, of course not. While some of her comments have drawn pushback from properly MAGA JD Vance and far-right Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, old television-obsessed Trump loves her. And she's oh so mindful that this exposure can be transformed into access and ultimately political power. Loomer's shtick is her single-minded loyalty to the president. Loyalty to Trump and fury at the disloyalty of others is the central component of her identity. Loomer's apparent recommendation that Trump fire a slew of national security officials, including General Timothy D. Hoare, the head of the National Security Agency and U.S. Cyber Command, has its roots in this obsession with loyalty. Many people serving in national security positions in the Trump administration are not card-carrying members of the MAGA movement. Such positions require deep expertise developed over long apolitical careers in the civil service or military. For 31-year-old Loomer, whose only exposure to conservatism in her short attention span lifetime has been MAGA conservatism, openly prejudiced, vindictive, and more a stew of grievance and hatred than a coherent political platform, such long-serving expert figures pose a threat. Not because people like General Hoare has ever shown open disloyalty to Trump. It's merely that they're not, like Loomer, his fanatical adherents. In her worldview, anything less is unacceptable. Even Mitch McConnell was moved to comment. If decades of experience in uniform isn't enough to lead the NSA, but amateur isolationists can hold senior policy jobs at the Pentagon, then what exactly are the criteria for working in this administration's national security staff? I can't figure it out.
I can.
Sensing her opening, Loomer has declared that she will establish an organization dedicated to investigating executive branch officials for suspected disloyalty to the president. Just like Steerpike in the Gorngast trilogy and our very own Dominic Cummings, sycophancy and obsequious loyalty flatters the kings in the altogether, leading inevitably to their attempts to seize power when the king succumbs to a fatal accident. Hopefully, however, in the way the idiot King Boris's failure of intelligence slash surfeit of vanity led to the firing of Cummings,
Luma won't have factored in that the chaos she is fomenting will inevitably lead her to being torn apart by death owls in the Tower of Flints.
A second unvaccinated child has died of the measles in Texas, and RFK Jr. thinks it's going so well that his response to the outbreak should be a model for the world. He's not entirely wrong. You can learn a lot by watching someone else fuck up entirely. For example, if not for RFK Jr., we might not know that we shouldn't promote vitamin A as a home treatment for measles. While it's true that very high doses of vitamin A administered in hospital has been shown to reduce mortality in measles cases, trying to do the same thing at home has put multiple children in hospital in Texas and New Mexico, where they're being treated for vitamin A poisoning, which causes liver failure. Equivocating on whether the measles vaccine is good or bad is also exactly the wrong thing to do, given that measles was declared eliminated in the US in 2000, specifically because of the vaccine. The current outbreak, according to Republican Congressman Ryan McKenzie, is due to immigrants.
First of all, many of these instances that are coming into our country are from illegal immigrants who have crossed the border with no checks, no actual health records, and they are bringing these diseases into our country. There is a reason why measles has started to spread in our country.
Yes, Ryan, there is a reason. The rise in vaccine hesitancy fueled by anti-science dickwads like RFK Jr.
In British politics, Boris Hare Tribute Act and hated straw thatch Thatcher devotee Michael Fabricant failed to overturn the eviction election from celebrity Big Brother 2025 and lost his Tory ass seat in the Big Brother house this Saturday, just as he failed to defeat the overturning of his 23,638 majority in the 24 election and lost his Tory ass seat in the House of Commons. All this whilst refusing to confirm whether it is his natural hair or a wig. Labour Business Secretary Jonathan Reynolds similarly refused to confirm whether the government could keep the furnaces running at the British steel production plant in Scunthorpe, despite the urgent need for raw materials that feeds these furnaces being the very reason the government chose to step in. The government was recalled from the Easter break for an emergency session this Saturday to rush through a law allowing the government to take control of the plant after Chinese owners Jinjai announced that the plant is losing £700,000 per day and that they couldn't afford to keep it running. He also couldn't put a number on the cost to the taxpayer if the plant was put under public control. It needed to be put under government control because Labour is the party of protecting workers' jobs and the patriotic right of Britain to be able to make its own steel in the last remaining steel plant, notwithstanding the fact that the cost of energy supplied to industrial plants is 46 times higher in the UK than the global average. Kemi Badenoch poo-pooed the proposed law, saying the deal that the Tories would have worked out when she was business secretary but didn't get round to actually defining because they were in the midst of negotiations when the general election was called would have been oh so much better than any deal that Labour is going to work out. Sounding familiarly like Michael Gove saying that, ooh, the Brexit deal the Boris will come up with, whilst voting down Theresa May's countless times, will be so much better than anything anyone else can think up. Despite this, Gove got granted a peerage in Rishi Sunak's resignation honours list, so he'll get to sit in the House of Lords and provide expertise as to whether bills such as Jonathan Reynolds should be made law. Of course, as Gove will no doubt fail to remind us of what he said during Brexit, such expertise is the stuff of which we have had enough.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our straw man level patrons, Chuck Gray, Mike Smith, LT, Colin Laiela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Mark Reike, and Abba Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we could just call her Amber. And last year at QED, I met the listener recognised at QED the year before because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much for your continued patronage, everybody. It's really very much appreciated. Thank you.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/FallaciousTrump or in the Discord at fallaciouStrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outburst and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.